Last week, I decided to speak about a topic that I think is nearest and dearest to all our hearts, and that's the desire to be happy and to be free of suffering, and that's what binds us all in a universal shared longing, desire to be happy. And I mostly focused on the clear distinction that the Buddha made between the happiness that we mostly find ourselves involved in, what he called worldly happiness, lokiya sukha, the happiness that depends on satisfying something that we want, something, some hunger that we have, fulfilling a hunger that depends on conditions, that usually depends on things being pleasant and the absence of unpleasantness, and a happiness that he called the happiness of, beside being our conventional worldly happiness, one that's very, that we need in order to be buoyed through our life, to enjoy the world of sense pleasures, enjoy the world of good company. Still, this kind of happiness, if we make it our devotion, he called the happiness of slavery or the happiness of bondage, that it's all subsumed, any kind of worldly happiness is subsumed under the umbrella of what's called dukkha, which is unsatisfactory, unreliable. So even the best kind of worldly happiness still leaves in its wake, because things change, leaves a sense of loss and that kind of happiness is not so reliable. Rather, he suggested that we aim for, that all of us in our life and those who come to spiritual practice, without knowing it, may be aiming for a different kind of happiness. And he called that different kind of happiness, one that is to be encouraged, he called it lokutra sukha, or transcendental happiness, or the happiness of freedom, the happiness that is free of hunger, the happiness that doesn't depend on whether there's pleasure or the absence of pain, that happiness that can pervade and hold both pleasure and pain, gain and loss, fame and shame, all of the worldly winds that blow through our lives, that can hold all of them and maintain it and have a sense of well-being that's beyond the power and influence of whatever's happening. And that's called it's called freedom or liberation or nirvana. And that the idea is, if you aim for that highest happiness, I'm just reiterating what I said last week, if you aim for the highest happiness, that the happiness of freedom, that doesn't mean that you give up the things of this world, worldly happiness. In fact, all the other kinds of pleasure come in the wake of having your heart open and non-reactive. You're able to experience great joy and also great sorrow without getting bound up in it. So this is the direction. I spent much of the time just describing these two different kinds of happiness last week. But in my own mind, I didn't get as specific about how the way that we live our lives, what we do with our lives, can bring us all kinds of happiness that are not just worldly happiness, but the kind of worldly happiness that leads to, that's onward leading, that leads to the happiness of freedom. And the way the Buddha spoke about it, in many different ways, but one of the ways that he spoke about it is that if you see life the way it really is, you'll see that it has all kinds of problems that are just inherent in being born. You've heard me, those of you who've been here before know that I often like to say that the being born, and I borrowed this from the Wiley's Dictionary, the Wiley's Dictionary definition of birth is the leading cause of death. But I expanded it for my own purposes, that birth is the leading cause of all kinds of stress. It's the leading cause of not wanting what you get, not getting what you want. It's the leading cause of sickness, old age. It's the leading cause of all kinds of things that are inevitable. And it's really important, as the Buddha taught us, as a way to begin that process of finding the happiness of freedom, to see that for what it is, to stop living as though it's really possible to have a life that's free of those inevitable things like sickness, old age, and death, loss, et cetera, frustrated desire, wounded pride. All those things are inevitable for everybody's life. But he didn't stop there. He said that if you see more clearly that what keeps us really bound up and in contention, fighting with reality, is this tendency of our mind to want things to be different than the way they are every moment. How many of you really live contentedly? If we're really honest with ourselves, we're mostly, from the moment we wake up, a little dissatisfied. And this is an expression of the second truth that he said, if you really examined it and followed the prescription that he mentioned, you would begin to abandon this cause of this inevitable suffering turning into a lot of mental suffering, a lot of dissatisfaction. And that is this: to see clearly that what keeps you bound up in fighting with reality is your craving for more sense pleasure, craving for more existence, craving to have things stop, craving for things to be different than the way they are. And this craving actually makes it harder to deal with the inevitable, actually adds mental suffering to the basic stress of how it is. So this, if you can abandon this cause, this is a leading edge of moving toward this happiness of freedom, to abandon this tendency to want things to be different than the way they are. He didn't stop there. He said there really is one for each of us. Every single person can experience a cessation, a melting away, a letting go of that cause of suffering. There is the capacity in each of us to be free, to feel that freedom, to know this. His prescription for this was to realize that. Don't stop with just knowing that craving leads you to mental suffering. That doesn't do anybody any good unless it becomes the cause of truly letting go and feeling and knowing for yourself that there is freedom in this very life, in the midst of it all. And he didn't stop there either. He went on to say that there are means of developing both worldly and this transcendental happiness. And the heart of it is what he described in the Noble Eightfold Path. And every tradition has its version of the Noble Eightfold Path. They're just basically universal truths about what can bring a happiness to our hearts and to the hearts of all beings. And the heart of that Noble Eightfold Path is first and foremost the cultivation, and this is to me the heart of what leads to happiness, both worldly and otherworldly, is the importance of virtue, the importance of what's the Buddha called sila, or ethics, morality, living a life of non-harmingness, non-harming. And so it's not just, okay, I'm going to choose the happiness of transcendence. I'm not going to get bound up in the happiness of sense pleasures. There are means that you can employ. You can see for yourself day after day, moment after moment, any of us can, that if we practice wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood, this will lead us onward to feeling more happy. And I'll just read a few things that I thought were quite sweet about just the foundation of virtue and how it is onward leading toward happiness. This is from the what's called the Anguttara Nikaya, or the numbered teachings or the numbered discourses of the Buddha. This is a very kind of arcane kind of dialogue that you find in the sutras that can drive some people crazy, but I'm going to do it anyway. What, Lord, is the benefit of virtuous ways of conduct? What is their reward? Non-remorse, Ananda, is the benefit and reward of virtuous ways of conduct. Non-remorse. And what, Lord, is the benefit and reward of non-remorse? Gladness, Ananda. And what, Lord, is the benefit and reward of gladness? Joy. And what, Lord, is the benefit and reward of joy? Serenity. And what, Lord, is the benefit and reward of serenity? Happiness. And what, Lord, is the benefit and reward of happiness? Concentration of the mind. And what, Lord, is the benefit and reward of concentration? Knowledge and vision of things as they really are. And what, Lord, is the benefit and reward of knowledge and vision of things as they really are? Revulsion and dispassion. And what, Lord, is the benefit and reward of revulsion and dispassion? The knowledge and vision of liberation. Hence, Ananda, virtuous ways of conduct have non-remorse as their benefit and reward. Non-remorse has gladness and its benefit and reward. Gladness has joy as its benefit and reward. Joy has serenity as its benefit and reward. Serenity has happiness as its benefit and reward. Happiness has concentration as its benefit and reward. Concentration has knowledge and vision of things as they really are as its benefit and reward. Knowledge and vision of things as they really are has revulsion and dispassion as its benefit and reward. Revulsion and dispassion have the knowledge and vision of liberation as their benefit and reward. In this way, Ananda, virtuous ways of conduct lead step by step to the highest happiness. Now, you may have gotten stuck with the passage. I'll say it again. And what, Lord, is the benefit and reward of knowledge and vision of things as they really are? Revulsion and dispassion. Now, revulsion and dispassion, what do you think that means? Revulsion and dispassion. I mean, our conventional way of looking at revulsion is, that makes me sick. But there is, as part of our unfolding insight knowledge, if we see things the way they are in our life, if we understand that first fundamental truth that the Buddha talked about, is that everything in our life is marked by three common characteristics. Every experience, every day of our lives, every person in our life, every possible sense experience that we have is marked by three experiences, and or by three characteristics. And those three characteristics, those three common characteristics, are that everything has the nature to arise and the nature to pass away. Everything is marked by impermanence and change. So that's the first characteristic. Because everything is marked by impermanence and change, there is no lasting satisfaction to be found in any experience, in any person, in your mind, in your body, in any internal or external experience. So everything is marked by unsatisfactoriness. If we really knew that, if we really know that, then our mind begins to be develop some dispassion, some less involvement, less clinging, less bound up in, less identification with things that can't make us really happy. And initially, when a person, and I may be probably everyone in this room at some point, otherwise you might not even be here tonight, at some point you felt this kind of dismay at the futility of finding anything, any reliable experience. The futility of finding any experience that will make you permanently happy in your everyday life. Has anybody had that? That a feeling of dismay about that and a recognition that it's futile to try to find anything? Isn't that what turned you toward turned you toward the Dharma, turned you toward that search that no other desire could fulfill, the search for freedom? It doesn't happen if you still think that there's an experience that you can have that will give you lasting happiness in this world of change. So if you see things, if you've opened to these common characteristics, the inevitable result is your mind will just begin to let go, begin to release the holding so tightly, the clinging, the obsession, as I talked about during the sitting tonight, the obsession with trying to get somewhere, the obsession with what's next, and begin a process of opening to life just the way it is. And if we open to life the way it is, then we inevitably begin to find our seat, our Buddha seat in the middle of it all. We are able to meet then joys, sorrows, things that come and they go without the sense that there's something wrong here. Things are slipping through my fingers. I brought along a passage from Edgar Allan Poe, who is exclaiming the pain of having to open to the fact of change, but he was in process in this poem. I stand amid the roar of a surf-tormented shore, and I hold within my hand grains of golden sand. How few, yet how they creep through my fingers to the deep while I weep, while I weep. Oh God, can I not grasp them with a tighter clasp? Oh God, can I not save one from the pitiless wave? Is all that we see or seem but a dream within a dream? He's grappling with the fact of impermanence. But this is the, at least in Dharma circles, this is the springboard to happiness. This is the beginning of joy. As William Blake, the poem that I've often shared here, this poem where he says, he or she who binds to herself a joy does the winged life destroy. But she who kisses the joy as it flies lives in eternity's sunrise. But she who clings to the joy, dukkha, suffering. Then John O'Donohue, I don't know how many of you know, beautiful, I think Irish poet, no longer alive. He, a former priest, he in his poem called Fluent, I'd love to live like a river flows, carried by the surprise of its unique unfolding, of its own unfolding. Now this is someone who sees that in order to find happiness, we have to live in harmony with things as they are, with change. And in fact, the Buddha, every day with the monks and the nuns, and since for 2,500 years, The chant, same chant has been done every day in monasteries, and it goes, as all of you probably, many of you know, it goes in Pali, it goes, Anicca Vadasankara Upadva Yadamino Upakitua Niruchanti Desang Vupasamo Sukho, means all things are impermanent, they arise and they pass away. To be in harmony with this truth brings great happiness. So it's the secret. It doesn't sound like what we're taught when we wake up in the morning and open up our computers or turn on the TV or look at the billboards. Opening to impermanence is this key to happiness. But wisdom and knowledge of things as they are is a springboard to great happiness, to the happiness of freedom. So the Buddha didn't stop there. He talked about there being many means. I talked about virtue. I talked about knowledge and things as they are, wise understanding that leads to wise intention. He also talked about the happiness and joy that comes from learning to abide passionately and intensely in the present moment, that joy and happiness that comes with a concentrated heart and mind. That it's not just something that, it's not about winning the lottery. It's not about the accumulation of stuff. It's about what happens when your mind and body are in the same place. When your mind is not looking ahead and not looking back, and you are rooted in whatever it is that you're doing, whatever it is you're saying, whatever it is you're feeling, and you're in the most immediate way with life as it's unfolding, like that river with its natural unfolding. When you are living in that kind of immediacy, with a concentrated heart and mind, it brings a great happiness. It brings a great pleasure. And it was considered one of the main causes of not only worldly happiness, because it's worldly in that even a concentrated mind is not permanent and ultimately not reliable, but it also gives us a glimpse of that sense of transcendental kind of happiness, a glimpse of unity, a glimpse of oneness that all of us long for. All of us long to return to our natural state, which is in a state of total immersion with life as it is. A state where our mind is not thinking that we've gotten cut off from the flow of life. We've never gotten cut off from the flow of life. That's our imagination. So when from our own efforts, from our own interest, from our own determination, keep putting our mind back in our body, orienting it to the present moment, we can gain the confidence that it is possible to experience, to reclaim that oneness, to reclaim that wholeness. Even if it's a glimpse with concentration, it is a springboard to realizing that is what our natural state is. And it's not by accident. It's natural to us, but we need to reclaim it through the arousing of our energy and effort and our practice, whatever practice you do. Concentrated mind is a cause of happiness. The Buddha said that the concentrated mind isn't really a reliable kind of happiness. It's very helpful. But a more reliable happiness is the happiness that comes from what's considered the quality that is the gateway to nirvana, which is the last of the so-called 10 perfections of the Buddha, of any Buddha, of any person that really wants to refine a sense of happiness, to refine a sense of well-being. There are 10 qualities that we can continue to refine in our lives, and with each one, it brings more and more happiness. Are you all interested in ways that you can actually refine happiness? Or you just want to hear just the word happiness in the air? You know, it's actually nice to have happiness in the air, but this makes it a little bit more serious. I'll go through the different 10 perfections. The one I was about to refer to was the perfection of equanimity. Equanimity is the quality of balance and serenity, that capacity to see things the way they are and not be so reactive. To be able to see, okay, you know, my body's in pain. This is the pain body. I'm going to do everything I can to fix it, but whether I experience pain or the absence of pain, it may be beyond my will or wish. I'm just going to work. I'll work with it the way it is. And this is the quality of serenity. I care about myself, but I may not be able to keep myself from experiencing difficulties. That's just how it is. You notice the feeling with that? It's not. Oh my God! I've got a knee pain. I've got a back pain. My bank account's low. Okay. Things are the way they are. I don't want to make light of those things, the painful things. But we can even develop equanimity around our neurotic reactions. Oh, this is what a neurotic reaction is. We can see, I'm really nuts today. And you can see by the knowing of it, by meeting it with awareness, already that quality of equanimity grows. But there are other qualities that we can perfect, that we can refine. The word parami also is translated as completeness. That be aroused to a point where they express a level of perfection or completeness. The first quality that I speak about a lot, and it's really the first teaching that the Buddha offered, that is a leading cause of happiness and joy, is the practice of dana, a practice of generosity. It's something that we can refine every day in our lives. We can move from fearful giving, from beggarly giving, from giving that which we don't care about, to giving ourselves completely, to giving freely that which we value most. We can experience and check it out, experience for ourselves great joy in the thought of giving things, and then joy in the act of giving things, and then joy in the memory of giving things. You do this over and over, you start to have more happiness. How many of you have made a practice of strengthening your dana? Strengthening, and when I say dana, I don't mean just in the basket here every Tuesday. I mean when the impulse arises to be generous, to practice it, to extend yourself in that way. It is a very reliable quality that we all have this tremendous capacity, and it brings great joy. Second one I talked about already, the refinement of our ethics and morality, the refinement of care to be harmless in our speech, to be harmless in our actions, not to steal, not to cheat, not to exploit others with our minds, with our bodies, not to cloud our perception with intoxicants to the point where we're heedless or where we're careless, that we can actually expand and refine our ethics and morality to the point where we can experience what the Buddha called the bliss of blamelessness, the bliss of not having to reflect on the things that we've done that caused harm, not have to feel guilt, remorse, and the ultimate payback for things that we've said or things that we've done. I still reverberate from screaming at people. I think back to how many policemen that I've just wailed, you know, just screamed at and called every name in the book. And I still think about it. And it still brings pain to my heart, even though there was a bit of intoxication in the moment of doing it, as there often is when we get angry and able to cut loose. But that's followed by remorse, by guilt, by just not feeling good about that. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. We've all done things like that. But yet, through wise action, through the bliss, through the practice of sila, of ethics, morality, can become the cause of great happiness in our life. So just practicing wise speech, speech that is truthful. How many of you exaggerate? How many of you speak in untimely ways? How many of you speak sometimes not for somebody's benefit, but to harm them? How many of you go in for digs? How many of you withhold? That's another kind of speech, passive aggression. So this is something we can continually refine our speech: kind, gentle, for one's benefit, truthful, not talking about third parties as much as we do, not gossiping. Just how much energy is drained from our natural vitality by trashing other people through speech, subtle or very obvious. And how it builds up, it tends to be driven by building up some kind of superiority view, and raising ourselves as though we are somehow better than the person that we judge. There's the inequality of being. In real time, there's no one who's any better than anyone else. Can you find anything, anyone here better than anyone else, in real time, in the immediate present? That's all just it's a kind of masturbation, the comparing mind. It's just empty, empty discharge. It is. Causes suffering. Yet, the ceasing of that is the cause of happiness. So I won't spend too much time on this because we're running out of time. So the 10 paramis, dana, sila, which I've talked about, the bliss of blamelessness, the joy of renunciation, the joy of saying, I'm giving up practicing the cause, doing the things that I know cause me suffering. And experiencing a joy in letting go, the joy in not holding on so tightly. So I can't get too into renunciation tonight, but it's a joyful thing. As Suzuki Roshi put it, renunciation is not giving up the things of this world, but in letting go, in realizing that they go away, in finding that harmony with impermanence. And then just relaxing, settling back into the moment. So the parami, or the perfection of renunciation, the perfection of wisdom, deepening our understanding of the Four Noble Truths, of the of suffering and the end of suffering, deepening our understanding of our own minds and bodies, and what is true about our mind and our body, what's true about our life, what is true about what brings happiness and what leads to suffering. Knowing that for ourselves, perfecting that, this is a cause of happiness. Next one is called wirya or virya, which is the perfection of energy and diligence and vigor and effort. It's learning how to refine our effort so that we can maximize our vitality and our energy for living life in the immediate present with a lot of gusto. And that's something that we're not just stuck with. Some people, it's a very common conversation is, that person has a lot of energy. That person doesn't have much energy. I think there is some difference in vital energy, but a lot of it is just habit, and that we can actually build our vital energy, build our energy through effort, through actually every day, not in a kind of not destructive way where you do something because it's good for you, but you just keep informed by wisdom, you keep inclining toward effort for the right things, things that will lead to more happiness. And it builds, effort builds effort. Energy builds energy. And you just keep building every day. Do your practice. The perfection of patience, developing patience, which is, of course, the opposite of impatience, which is just another form of aversion. So that's doing whatever it is that helps loosen your aversion, help you settle back and begin to enter the flow of life and trust the unfolding of things, not be so hurried, be in such a hurry to help the Dharma along. But we tend to be so obsessed with what's next that we have to really learn to manage time to develop patience. When I say manage time, it means manage our perception of time, manage our understanding of where happiness really is to be found. It's not to be found in the future. All search for happiness in the future, I think I read to you last week from Nisargadatta, all search for happiness in the future is misery and leads to more misery. That the only happiness that we can aim for reliably is the happiness that can be found right in the here and now. So that if as long as we associate with the future, the tendency is to topple forward and to hurry, trying constantly to get somewhere. Just quickly through these, the perfection of truthfulness, that gets back into wise speech, inner and outer, telling ourselves the truth. Truth and honesty is one of the 10 perfections. And we can all become much more refined at that, much more nuanced about knowing as we talk to another person to say what's true but also what's useful. And sometimes telling the truth is not so useful in a certain moment if it's not timely. And for another variety of reasons. Then there's the perfection of determination and resolution, being determined, being resolved to be happy. That's the first and most important aim. Be determined to be happy. If you're wishy-washy about it, if you either think, oh, it's not possible, or, oh, it's okay for them but not for me, or any kind of consideration that is other than anything other than persistent, determined, resolved, you'll easily fall to the lowest common denominator. And so the encouragement to keep developing whatever helps determination. People who are athletes really know how important determination is. Last and not least, before I already did the final, the culmination of the paramis, which is equanimity, but the foundation even for equanimity as a perfection is the perfection of loving kindness. Is every day arousing thoughts of goodwill toward ourselves, first of all, and toward others. Anytime I talk about loving kindness, I've found in daily life the most successful kind of loving kindness. Of course, most important is that you're regarding yourself kindly and that you're being the best friend that you can to yourself. But a way of arousing the impulse of loving kindness and the feeling of loving kindness and the feeling of belonging and connection is to be constantly inclining toward goodwill with the people around you, the strangers, people you don't know, people who you can't stand, all beings. I call it the stealth loving kindness. Under your breath all day long, I wish you well. I wish you well. May you be happy. I love you. You're a human being. You're a sentient being. All beings want to be happy. I know that you cause suffering even though you want to be happy. When you cause suffering, your distorted, ignorant attempt to try to be happy. May you be happy. May you be happy. And you just keep generating that wish for yourself and for other beings. And hopefully you practice some of these things, you'll be happier. And it's just a crapshoot. It's something you can do something about. So may this conversation and thoughts of happiness, thoughts of the perfections, thoughts of the Four Noble Truths, all this be dedicated to the welfare and benefit of all beings, including ourselves. So let's just sit for one moment and And I call on the words of Hafiz as our final blessing or prayer, where he says, "You carry all the ingredients to turn your life into a nightmare. Don't mix them. You have all the genius to build a swing in your backyard for the divine, for that sounds like a hell of a lot more fun. Let's start laughing, drawing blueprints, gathering our talented friends. I will help you with my divine lyre and drum. You carry all the ingredients to turn your existence into joy. Mix them, mix them." May all beings have happiness and the cause of happiness. May all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings recognize the sacred happiness, the happiness of freedom, here and now, not look for anything but this. And may all beings at least grow in the happiness of equanimity, of serenity, able to meet the joys and the sorrows with less reactivity. Thank you. We have a few more, one more prayer that I'd like us to do, and then I have a couple announcements. First, one of our Sangha members, I can't remember who came up, Valeria, right. Valeria in the back. Her friend Daryl is about to be operated on for colon and liver cancer. Is that correct? And he will be operated on March 7th. So I would like all of us for a few moments to bring Daryl, Valeria into our hearts and minds, and to just shower them with all the goodwill and caring and compassion, knowing that we're all subject to the same vulnerabilities, and to send deep wishes of healing and health and even equanimity to Daryl and all his near and dear ones, and to all of us as we meet the joys and the sorrows, and a deep wish that he be surrounded by healing, healing energy and love, and maybe have our practice tonight and maybe this week be dedicated to Daryl's health and well-being. May Daryl live with ease. And then another one of our Sangha members, Madison. Where's Madison? Madison has been with us for years, and for the last 21 months, believe it or not, for the last 21 months, Madison has been essentially homeless and has lived in 14 different temporary housing situations, and she desperately needs, and I know somebody here can come up with something, some idea, some place perhaps, she needs housing for 1 month, 4 solid weeks, for $650 or less, and has some preferences, but not absolute, for non-smoking and non-cat. But those are not as essential as having a roof over her head. And I'm putting this out on her behalf tonight. She has mentioned it before here, and unsuccessfully, and I just thought I'd give a good plug. And this is also one of the ways that we can grow in happiness and well-being is by taking care of each other. So if anyone here can provide or has information that could help provide some housing for our friend, that would be really great. Okay, thank you. Last but not least, there are two things. We have a very rare event happening this Saturday. the first of two half-day retreats at the Happiness Institute. It was originally dedicated to those who have committed to 60 days of practice, to what we're calling the rains retreat, a tradition that goes back to the time of the Buddha, that during the rainy season, people do a little more intensive practice, which is more kind of a sensible way of spending the rainy months. Of course, it's not so rainy here, and we live a different kind of life, but still we can dedicate our time for some practice. But this is now expanded to include anyone who'd like to sit together on Saturday at from 9 to 1 at the Happiness Institute. And this is at 1720 Market Street. Public transportation strongly suggested. But please, come one, come all, and tell all your friends to come. It's a really cool thing to practice together for several hours in the city. And we'll sit and walk, and we'll have a little Dharma discussion. Some of it will be a check-in about the 60 days, but most of it is just being together. And Happiness Institute has offered, as their dana, us being able to be there. So it will be a dana retreat. There'll be a dana basket put out for our sangha, for supporting me for being there. But it's all dana. I'll be offering dana in the form of teaching. You'll offer dana if you like. But the Happiness Institute has offered dana. So there's no charge for it, but it's all in the spirit of giving. And hopefully you will mostly generously bring yourself. That is, I consider that high dana, is to just bring your presence to the half day long. And then last but not least, we have we don't have this room, we're not offered this room by dana, but you offer dana to support our room here, and otherwise we can't be here. So $150 a week, $600 a month, which is, you know, kind of, it's a challenge for us, but the invitation is for you to practice dana in the form of support for the room rental. There are many ways. Most of you already know there are many ways to offer that. Cash in the basket, PayPal, checks to the church are tax deductible if you put Mission Dharma on the line. And then last but not least, the teacher dana. I offer this freely. If you feel to support me being able to do this, you can. That's another way to practice dana. So thank you for listening to all of that, and thanks for reflecting on happiness a little bit and the causes of happiness. And keep practicing. See you Saturday, everyone.